Happy Easter. Whether you are here in person or joining us online, we just want you to know how incredibly excited we are that you have chosen to celebrate alongside of us as we look back. And have you ever noticed how when we approach holiday seasons that every holiday has this uncanny ability to bring out the memories and the nostalgia in every single one of us? Like we begin to look back at holidays past and it reminds us of all the traditions we used to carry. The things we did every single holiday season at our grandparents' house or the things we did with our siblings or maybe the things that our parents made us do every single holiday that at 12, 14, 16, 18 years old, we absolutely loathed it when our parents made us do that tradition again. And yet, have you ever noticed this as well? That here you sit as an adult with a family of your own and all those traditions that you loathed at 12, 14, 16, 18, you're now carrying those out in your own family and making your 12, 14, 16, or 18-year-old kid explore and understand those traditions as well. And ultimately, as we look back at holidays past and we look into our past, every time we look into our past, it ultimately uncovers two things. One, it uncovers some things in our life and in our past that we are extremely proud of, some memories that we love to revisit. But on the other side of the coin, every time we look into the past, it also reveals the exact inverse. It reveals some things in our past that we're ashamed of. Some things that we are embarrassed of and that we hate to look back on and remember those things. And growing up in my household, either end of those spectrums were things that you could never escape. Because everything in my household growing up was recorded on VHS tapes. And for those of you in this room who are about 20 or younger, you have no idea what those three letters joined together even mean. Because in an age where everything can be recorded at the palm of your hand, it is almost unimaginable to try to think about a bunch of middle-aged dads running around the sports fields with a giant 10-pound camcorder on their shoulder. You know the one I'm talking about where you actually had to stick the VHS tape into it and it recorded directly to the VHS tape. Y'all, that was my dad. Like every holiday, every possible memory, he was the one lugging around that camera, making sure that he caught it all on camera. It's the very reason why in our house, my mom could testify to this day that we have a stack upon stacks of VHS tapes. VHS tapes that are labeled Christmas 1992 and Easter 1989 and Ben's first YMCA basketball game. And this is the moment of the sermon where my brothers, I have two older brothers, would say, well, we never had any VHS tapes that were labeled Jason's first YMCA basketball game or Andy's first T-ball game. And I'm not sure in those moments what they're looking for me to do, to just admit that my parents loved me more than they loved them or what. But there's this reality in every single one of our lives that as I look back at the memories of past, that I begin to see many moments that are held in those VHS tapes and which I'm proud of. Moments in my life when I think back, we have one such tape that was labeled Easter in our very new house. My dad had built a house. It was like his fifth child of the family. It was his pride and joy. And our very first Easter in that house, he whipped out the VHS camcorder, and he recorded the annual family Easter egg hunt. Anybody else in the house have the annual family Easter egg hunt? Woo-woo, right? And as he was recording it, there I was, little three-year-old Ben, running around in my Superman pajamas. And y'all, I ain't talking about pajamas that had Superman on them. I am talking about pajamas that literally looked like Superman's suit, right? Snug fitting, all blue, the block S on the front, the cuffs of the wrist and the ankles had the red on it. It had the fake belt. And this was back in the age, right, where nowadays it's like all pajamas have to be snug fitting just in case something happens in your house overnight or whatever. It's safe for your kid. This was back in the age where it was acceptable. These actually had a flowing red cape that came off the back of these pajamas. And there was my dad coaching behind the camera, his three-year-old son, who he was secretly hoping would take down my 12, 13, and 15-year-old sibling at the family Easter egg hunt. And as I think about that memory and what was caught on tape, what I realize is that is the memory, that's the VHS tape that I want busted out when I'm 21 years old and I bring my girlfriend home who I want to be my wife. Those are the tapes that I want her to see. Because that thing was sweet. And at one time, I was cute. Something happened along the way, but at one time, let's remember that. And yet, what y'all know is this. Those aren't the tapes our parents ever bust out, are they? The ones they choose to bust out are the ones of me standing in front of the TV with my toy saxophone, singing at the top of my lungs, rocking my soul to the bosom of Abraham. I was 5 years old, y'all. I'm 35 now. I don't even know what that means now. And yet at 5 years old, there I was, blasting into my high-pitched toy saxophone and singing at the top of my lungs. And y'all, I sit on the front row every week, not because I have to get up here. I sit on the front row so that nobody hears my singing voice as I sing. And you think it's bad now. At 5 years old, that baby was off pitch. It was not pretty. And what I'm forced to admit, thinking back to that memory and seeing that on VHS tape, is this: Ben, that is a moment in your history that you should be ashamed of. And what I know is this: I don't know what friends of my parents thought it was a good idea to get me a toy saxophone, but what I can guarantee you is this: they were no longer my parents' friends about 2 weeks after they gave me that saxophone. And yet the reality is this, is that in every facet of our life, be it holiday or not, as we begin to look back, in our looking back, it always uncovers moments from our past of embarrassment. Moments of our past of shortcomings and mistakes and miscues. Ultimately, in our lives, when we begin to look back at our past and the journey that we have walked through, what we begin to see is scars become unveiled that we'd rather not relive in our life. It reveals a life that is full of battles. And I talked to you at the very beginning about how there would be this constant theme that wove through our service today. And there's this reality that every single one of us find ourselves fighting battles in our lives. And yet what we always miss is that one of the greatest battles we fight every single day of our lives is the battle we're fighting against guilt and shame. Against this feeling in our life of the guilt and shame that is weighing us down because of the mistakes that we have made in our past. The choices we've made that we now know weren't the right choices. The directions that we've chosen to go that we know have taken us off the path of the life we were designed to live and the life we wanted to live. And yet along the way, every single one of us walked into this room, maybe some of us feeling the full weight of that shame in our life. Because what you know and what you walked in with was this: the shame you're feeling from the things you said to your spouse this week. You walked into this room carrying the shame of the lie that you've been living for longer than you can remember. You walked into this room carrying the shame of the things you just keep going back to again and again and again on that website that you know are slowly deteriorating the intimacy that you have in your marriage. Maybe you walked in here carrying the shame of that one night years ago in which you got behind the wheel of a car, you did something when you knew you shouldn't have done it, and it led to consequences that you didn't want to have to experience in your life. Or maybe for you, it's that one moment, and in that moment, you thought the choice that you were making was okay. And yet what you now see is that from every moment, from that decision forward, you haven't been able to shake the regret that you feel for making that decision. You see, the reality in our lives is that every single one of us walks into this place in one way, shape, or form, whether we like to admit it or not, carrying some form of shame and guilt from the mistakes of our past. And the good and the bad news of that is this, is that because when you look down your row, you can be confident of the fact that you aren't the only one in this battle. It underlines this truth, that you aren't fighting this battle by yourself, and that you aren't the first one to be fighting this battle. You see, this battle has been around since the very beginning of humanity. Since the very first two human beings walked on this earth, they were introduced to the weight of shame and guilt in their life, but that isn't how their life started. You see, as Adam and Eve were formed from the dust into human beings, they were walking around this earth probably like one-year-old adults, right? And what we know is that as one-year-olds are capable of experiencing life through the freedom of not having shame and guilt. That doesn't kick in, parents, help me out here, right? That doesn't kick in about till the terrible twos. When our children consciously begin making decisions against the authority in their life. And then it carries on to the terrible threes and the terrible fours. And I don't know what word we have to describe teenage years. Can I get an amen? You see, in our lives, there has been a short season in which we've experienced the freedom from shame and guilt that we all desire to experience right here, right now in our lives. And Adam and Eve, as they walked on this earth, had a short season of that life of freedom. We find at the very beginning of God's instruction manual for our life, the love letter that he writes to you and I. In Genesis, the very first book of the Bible, in chapter 2, it says this. Now the man and his wife, talking about Adam and Eve, were both naked, but they felt no shame. They felt absolutely no shame, and looking back at their life, they saw no mistakes, they saw no miscues, they saw nothing to be ashamed of. But in that moment, as he always does, the enemy immediately went to work. In the same way he's gone to work in your life and in my life, he went to work in Adam and Eve's life in an attempt to begin to convince them that going your own way, choosing your own path, was the best option for your life. And in convincing them to choose their own path and go their own way. Like, God gave you all of this, but he gave you the free will to make your own choices. And so he had to give you one choice that was the inverse of all the good stuff. And he said, just don't eat from this one tree. You can have all the rest of the good stuff. Just don't choose this one. And in choosing their own way and saying, I need that apple from that tree, even though it looks the same as the 1,000,001 other apples in the garden. What they immediately began to experience in the aftermath of that decision was the full weight of shame and guilt in their life. Just a few verses later, we read this in Genesis 3. So she took some of the fruit and ate it. Then she gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it too. At that moment, their eyes were opened, and they suddenly felt shame. And in this one moment, for all of humanity, shame became more than an event. It became more than a memory. Shame became something in our lives that was easily embedded into our identity. It became something that slowly, as the enemy worked in our stories and our battles, began to convince us that this is who you are. You did something bad, and now that choice now defines you for the rest of your life. You see, shame can best be defined in this way. This is what it looks like for you and for me. This is what it looks like in my story and what I battle so often. That shame is the belief that I did something bad, therefore I am bad. I made a bad decision, and now that defines who I am at my core. And if it's in my identity, then what we all realize is that it can't be changed. If it now defines me, it's something that can't be changed. And Brené Brown, an incredible author and speaker, maybe some of you all have read some of her books. She's written some incredible books. She does TED Talks. Brené Brown did a TED Talk on this very topic of shame. And she put such an incredible definition of what shame was that I wanted to read it to you all this morning, because I think it highlights the truth and what we feel and what we experience in this battle of shame in our life and how it begins to affect the way we look at ourselves and also the way we look at our relationships with other people. You see, this is what Brené writes. Check this out. She says, shame is the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. Something we've experienced, done, or failed to do makes us unworthy of connection. That because of what I've done, that very mistake needs to be hidden. Because if anybody else, if my spouse knew the things that I've done, if my friends knew the things that I've done and the mistakes that I've made, there's no way they would ever want to be friends with me. And that belief doesn't even scratch the surface on what a perfect, all-knowing God thinks of me. And there's no way until I get my act together that he could possibly want anything to do with me. Or I'm never going to get my act together, and so I might as well just reserve myself to the belief that God will never want anything to do with me. And this is the power that shame wields in our life. That as I believe the mistakes of my past begin to define who I am, it doesn't just change the way I look at myself, it also changes the way I think. It changes the way I operate every single day. And this is what you and I are living. This is what my story on most days looks like. that shame begins to change our thinking and the way in which we operate every single day within our relationships, within our workplace, within our marriage, within the way that we parent, within the way we look at our finances, within our neighborhoods, etc., etc., etc. And if you're anything like me, shame-based thinking really affects us in three distinct ways, and I want to quickly outline this for you all and see if you relate. You see, the first way in which my shame changes my thinking is this, is that shame makes me vulnerable to perfectionism. It makes me want to become a perfectionist, and I do that very well. Deep inside of me, there's this desire to want to be perfect, to want everything around me to be controlled by me and perfect by me. And that stems from really two separate beliefs. The first is this: I've experienced the pain and the weight of shame. And the weight and the pain and shame have come from the mistakes I've made. And so if I don't want to feel that anymore, then I have to strive to be perfect. Because the only thing that's going to keep me from the shame I feel is not making any more mistakes that bring that shame into my life. But it doesn't stop there. It also makes me a perfectionist because I begin to believe, even though things aren't good on the inside of me, perfectionism is the best front possible. That if I can look like I'm perfect on the outside, then maybe everybody else won't actually see what's going on the inside. Hello. Been there before? That we become vulnerable to becoming perfectionists when we are smothered by the weight of our shame from our mistakes. But it doesn't stop there. It isn't just in the way we look at ourselves. It also spreads into the way we look and think at others. You see, because of our shame, we become critical of ourselves. And when we become critical of ourselves, here's what it does. It drives us to become overly critical of others. Have you noticed that before? As I become critical of myself, I don't feel good about myself. It drives me to become overly critical about other people in my life. And we've all heard the saying, right? Misery loves company. I feel miserably ashamed, and so I kind of want you to feel that way too. Because so often we live our lives under this belief system that we believe if you look and feel bad, it makes me look and feel not as bad. And so what do? Shamed people, shame people. And we begin to believe that if I point out all the things in you, then maybe it won't allow everybody else to see all the things in me. That if I move the limelight off of my mistakes and my past onto your mistakes and your past, then maybe people won't see what actually has happened in my life and the mistakes that I've made. And then third, it changes our thinking in this way. That we become people who tend to use self-defeating thoughts in our lives to shield us from disappointment. See, we've all come to the realization at some point when number one has taken over in our lives and we strive to be perfectionist. We all reach a point, don't we, where we realize perfectionism isn't working. Like we're holding ourselves to unrealistic standards and we could never be perfect. And when we realize that perfectionism isn't working, the second option is to lower our standards, to lower our expectations. And in lowering our expectations, what we believe is that that protects ourselves. And ultimately, in doing this, we sabotage our future because we begin to live under this premise. There is no way I can do better. There is no way I can feel better. There is no way that I can escape this shame. And so I might as well just accept defeat. I've done this, it defines me, and there's no way I can do anything about it, so I might as well just keep doing it. I might as well just keep living there. I might as well just keep living the lie. I might as well just keep doing the same mistakes over and over and over, because if there's nothing that I can do about it, then there's no point in trying to win this battle. I might as well just accept defeat. And you see, what ultimately happens is when shame becomes a part of our story, when shame becomes a part of your story and my story, what ultimately happens every single time is that we quickly realize something inside of us is broken. And when we realize anything in this world is broken, our natural tendency is to do what? Try to fix it. Am I right, guys? Right? This bone is strong inside of us, isn't it? Like every time anything is broken, we got to fix it. We got to have a solution now. We got to do something about it. Our spouses just want to talk to us and want us to be listeners. And when they come to us with their problems, what do? We go into fix it mode. Like, I don't want to listen. I want to fix all your problems for you. But the problem with this is that we can't fix it. I can't go back and change the things that I've done in my past. There's nothing I can do to fix it. And when we realize that there's nothing we can do to fix it, our mindset ultimately changes to, I am not good enough. I'm not good enough. I will never be good enough. And y'all, I don't know if you can relate to this, but in so many facets of my life, this is where I live. I made a mistake in leadership, and so I'll never be good enough as a leader. Every single time I walk up on this stage, I flub my words and I don't get things right, and so I'll never be good enough. I'll never be the best. I'll never be what I should be. I make mistakes in my marriage. I make mistakes in my parenting. I'll never be good enough as a husband. I'll never be good enough as a father. And you see, the problem with that train of thinking is shame takes hold in our lives. And we begin to believe that I'm not good enough and I'll never be good enough. What happens is this. That train of thought, it begins in the area of our life in which we've made the mistake, but it never stays there. It isn't long before it's spread like wildfire into every other facet of our life. And we believe that in every facet of our life, I'll never be good enough. And as we begin to allow that feeling of I'll never be good enough in every facet of my life, as we allow that to take hold, what we begin to believe is this: there is no plausible way out. There's no way to escape that weight. There's no way to escape that feeling. And this, my friends, is the tactic that the enemy has used in your life and in my life for thousands of years. It started with Adam and Eve. But it didn't stop there. Then the story of God's people, the Israelites, they became enslaved to the Egyptians. And for hundreds of years, they were slaves to the Egyptian people. So much so that we know generation after generation was born into slavery. Thousands of people only knew themselves as slaves because they had been born into it, until one day a guy by the name of Moses came along and he freed these people from slavery, and they walked out into freedom. And yet the issue they faced is the exact same issue that you and I face in our lives and in our everyday struggles. And that issue was this: on the outside they had been freed, and on the inside they still saw themselves as slaves. And then God thought, I have a solution. In order for my people to feel valued, in order for them to feel loved, in order for them to live the life they were designed to live and experience life to the full, I'm going to, as my people, give them guardrails. I'm going to give them guardrails to help them stay on path. God didn't give us the law to be the no fun God. God gave us the law because he knew life is a whole lot more fun when you stay on the road than when you live life in the ditch. Because come on, y'all, how many of y'all like consequences? How many of you like pain? God knew that if you just stay between the guardrails that I'm giving you, you'll experience a life that is so much better than life lived in the ditch. And yet in that moment when God presented the law under this premise, the enemy went to work again. And he began to construe the message of what the law was and what God intended it to be. And he made his people begin to believe this: God only gave you the law, God only gave you these commands to remind you just how screwed up you are, how bad you are, how much you've messed up. And over time, what ended up happening is the church slowly turned into a place that was just a constant reminder of all the things I have to be ashamed of and guilty for. The church became a place in which I am just constantly reminded of all I am not and never will be. And because of that, I don't even want to walk into that place. I don't even want to encounter that place. If that's who Jesus is, I don't want that in my life. And y'all, that is where a story from 2,000 years ago collides with your and my story right here, right now, today. You see, you've asked the question before, undoubtedly. If you haven't, you should. How does something that happened 2,000 years ago possibly become relevant and real in my life right here, right now, today? And this is it. Because there's this reality in our lives that when at some point we've thought about God, all we've thought about is our shame. That for some of us, we've been buried under the weight of shame for so long. And what we miss is this: the longer we stay buried beneath that shame, the more the enemy believes that he's won. That in your life and in your story, along the way, somewhere, he has slowly convinced you that you'll never overcome this, that you'll never be defined by anything but this, that you'll always be broken, and you will never be good enough because of this or that in your past. But 2,000 years ago, on a Saturday night, he believed the exact same thing. And just as wrong as he was 2,000 years ago, he is just as wrong right here, right now, today, in your story and in my story. There's this song that we sing around here. In fact, we sung it last week. And right smack dab in the middle of this song, there's a line that's written that reads in this way: "Darkness rejoiced as though heaven had lost." That on that Saturday night, the God of the universe had put on flesh and had come to this world and had gone through the humiliation and the shame of enduring a shameful trial and a shameful execution. That on that Friday night, the God of the universe had subjected himself to this. And I don't think it's fitting on a day like this for us to get the full breath of what it means in our lives and in our story and the change and the healing that's possible if we don't get a picture of what God actually took on himself. Isaiah writes this: "But he was pierced for our rebellion, crushed for our sins. He was beaten so we could be whole. He was whipped so we could be healed. He was oppressed and treated harshly. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter. No one cared that he died without descendants, that his life was cut short in midstream. He had done no wrong and had never deceived anyone. But he was buried like a criminal." The God of the universe went through the pain of the beating and the whipping and being mocked and spit on and having thorns driven into his skull. He went through the pain of being pierced through his wrists and his feet and hung up on a cross in complete humiliation and shame in front of a group of people who just 1 week before, less than 1 week before, had been celebrating him and cheering him on as he marched into the city. Now he hung there in front of them in agony and pain with the shame and the weight of the shame of the world placed upon his shoulders. And for one dark minute, it felt like the shame of the world was too much for even him to handle. And in that moment, the enemy thought, if the shame of humanity is too much for the God of the universe to handle, then I've got humanity exactly where I want them, because I can make them believe that the weight of the shame from the mistakes of their past is too much for them to ever overcome as well. But that's not where our story has to end, y'all. Because that's not where his story ended. Jesus went to battle and took upon your shame and my shame for the sake of giving us an opportunity right here, right now in 2022 to be able to overcome it, to let go of it. And the writer of Hebrews does such an incredible job of underlining this truth that we so often miss in our lives, of what God has come to release us from and why something that happened 2,000 years ago is so powerful right here, right now, today, in your story and in mine. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2, he writes this: "For the joy set before him," talking about Jesus, "he endured the cross." And if you're anything like me, you're saying, wait, what? How could there be any joy set before him in enduring the pain and the humiliation and the shame of a cross, of taking the weight of the world upon himself so that he experienced separation from his heavenly Father? Why was there any joy in that? And the reason why we ask that question is because so often we ignore the next three words. There was joy in this moment because the God of the universe, by hanging on that cross and taking on our shame, was able to communicate the message that in this moment, I am scorning your shame. Do you know what that means in layman's terms? That means that he disregarded it. He cast it aside. He threw it away. But what Jesus ultimately knew was this, is that in our lives and in our stories and in what you walked in here with on this Easter 2022, that there will be moments in which you feel like the shame you are carrying around with you has been the death of so many things in your life, has been the death of your dreams, has been the death of what you wanted to become and the life you wanted to live and the difference you wanted to make in this world. And God knew that in order for you to live the life you desired to live and he designed you to live, it wasn't good enough just for him to take our shame on his shoulders. He had to go the next level. And he had to make a statement that went something like this, that I'm going to overcome the shame of the world so that you know that when I'm a part of your story, you can overcome that shame as well. That on your own, you can't erase those mistakes and the shortcomings of your past. But as soon as you introduce me into your story, I want to prove to you that not even death could hold me down. Just a few chapters earlier, the same writer wrote this, and this is so good, y'all. Because God's children, you and I, are human beings made of flesh and blood. The Son also became flesh and blood. For only as a human could he die? And only by dying and coming back to life could he break the power of the devil who had the power of death. And this last line is so good. Only in this way could he set free all. Hello. Only in this way could he set free all. You know that song that I was talking about earlier, the one with the line smack dab in the middle of it that said, "Darkness rejoiced as though heaven had lost"? There's a line that comes immediately after that that changes everything. But then Jesus arose with our freedom in hand. You catch that? Not with his freedom, but then Jesus arose with our, mine and yours, freedom in hand. That's when death was arrested. And my life began. See, when that group of people ran to the tomb 3 days later and there was no body, everything changed. And I'm not talking everything changed for religion. I'm not talking everything changed for a group of people 2,000 years ago. I'm talking everything changed in that moment in your story and in my story right here in 2022. But in order for us to experience the fullness of that healing that God wants to bring into your story and my story, that wipes away, that scorns the shame we've been living with and dealing with in our life, we have to be people who are willing to move the focus. You see, in our lives, we have to recognize this truth, that in order to heal from the shame of our past that we're living with presently, we have to move the focus from what I'm not to who Christ is. And you're asking, well, who is Jesus? You see, 2,000 years ago, on that Sunday morning, he'd made this statement. This is who I am and will always be in this world and in your story. I'm a God who's right here, walking through the messes with you, walking through the circumstances with you. I'm alive. I'm living and breathing and speaking into your story. And right here, right now, in this moment, I want to be a part of a little bit of healing in your story. Healing from your shame. Healing from your regret. Healing from the weight of those things that's been holding you down and killing your identity and your dreams and killing any hope that you'll ever be good enough. And here's what I wanted you to hear through the empty grave. You don't have to listen to the enemy anymore. All I want you to hear, all I want you to feel is this. Is that when you invite me into your story and you let me have your shame, this is what I proved. Death was never going to hold me down. But there's a second part that's even better. So it doesn't have to hold you down. That for so long it's felt like shame and guilt and embarrassment has been holding on to you and holding you back. But when you open up your hands and you let me have that, not only am I willing to take that, but you will no longer be held by that. You will simply, on this Easter, be held by me. And in that, you will experience freedom from everything that you've believed you could never escape. Pray with me. Father, this morning, on this day, Easter 2022, it is so easy to look at something that happened 2,000 years ago and to ask the question, how could that possibly carry any weight in my life and in my story and what I'm feeling and the weight of shame that I'm dealing with that makes me feel like I will never be good enough? And yet, God, here's the hope that we carry that makes this Easter just as relevant as that one. Is that you are a God who through the empty grave communicated this. Your shame doesn't have to hold you back anymore. Just let it go. Because I am a God who proved that death was never going to hold me down. And when you link arms with me, when you let me in, death doesn't have to hold you down either. So God, on this day, we choose, whether we have a relationship with you or not in this moment, to lean in to that truth. We thank you for that. It's in your name that we pray.